I'm Leanne Tran, psychologist who's worked with families whose kids don't fit the mold for almost 20 years. I've worked with children for decades, but I know parents are the real change makers when it comes to their kids. Having three kids of my own means I know it's not easy. Parent Like a Psychologist is all about simplifying how you support your kids with psychology information filtered through years of experience to take you from overwhelmed to confident. Come on in. So good morning, Alicia. You have a really interesting bio on your website. It's saying that you're the owner, director, and head tutor at Breakaway Education. So you opened it in 2016 when you realized there was not enough support or educational assistance from in your area, but also online. And so It describes you in a really nice way: passionate, enthusiastic, and driven. And you believe in the power of education and what education allows children to access throughout their lives. Does that kind of sum you up?
Yeah, in a nutshell. Yeah. It's a lifelong passion, I think, and something that, yeah, we can just make such a big difference in our own kids' lives and, you know, the kids around us, by, yeah, I guess showing them that and coming back to the name Breakaway, I think that, you know, nothing can kind of hold us back. So if we can break away from, yeah, like what's holding us back, so whether that's learning challenges or, you know, whole kit and caboodle of other things that could be as well, then, yeah, the world's your oyster. You could, yeah, go on and do whatever you want.
Yeah, I love that. And I kind of share that passion about education, or that belief as well, that it can really open up a lot of opportunities for kids.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And so many.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
No, that's all right. There's so many different opportunities as well, I think. Sometimes we're not aware of what we could possibly be doing, or where life basically could lead you. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so you've worked with hundreds of kids and you're holding one right now, not a client. But for those just listening along, you're holding a baby there that's you're just giving this perfect example of what the multitasking parent experience is, I think.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. She's my second child. So I have another child who's six, so she's in year one.
Yeah.
And this little bubba here, she's 4 months old. So
very cute and time consuming at 4 months old.
Yeah, definitely.
So we were talking just before about how today, you know, sometimes, because what I do is a lot of assessment for kids who might have learning difficulties, and you kind of alluded to the fact that they can come around for many different reasons. Sometimes if kids are autistic or have ADHD or anxiety, or just, you know, are a bit slower to learn certain things, they can all have, that all leads to difficulties. And tutoring, and I guess that intervention as well to teach kids in that really evidence-based way comes into play there. And if that's not so successful, kids might be diagnosed with specific learning disabilities or disorders that then require a lot of support throughout their life. What do you find the parents' experience is, though, when they first come to see a tutor? You were saying maybe they're not sure who to talk to.
Yeah. I think it depends on the parent. So, children are like dying in the back. I think it depends on the background of the parent as well. So sometimes we have parents that come to us and they have no idea about what a tutor is or what the role of a tutor could possibly be for their child. Some of that, I feel there's still like a stigma attached to tutoring, and tutoring is still seen as, you know, something that you only need if your, you know, child is severely struggling, which is not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
I think there's, There's a lot of information out there online now, which is great because it means that there are a lot more people that are informed about what possibly could be happening for their child or how their child might be experiencing things like the classroom. But in that, there's a lot of misinformation, or there's a lot of, if I take everything in from online, I still don't really know which one's fitting my child. So there's a lot of that goes on. We have a lot of parents that come in and say things like, my child has dyslexia, but then can't produce a report for us. So again, like something that's just been self-diagnosed in a sense. And then like it's kind of, oh, well, they have a difficulty in reading and they're a little bit behind. And so the parents are saying then that's why their child has dyslexia when it's not the case. If we do like a proper dyslexia screening, it doesn't come out as dyslexia. It's just the child is a little bit behind. And then we have some parents that come to us and they have as many reports as you could possibly get. And in those cases, sometimes the child has just been so over tested and over assessed. And it's great that they've got all of these bits of information and these pieces of the puzzle. I talk a lot about, the pieces of the education puzzle and the fact that there is more than one piece that will go into what will help your child the most, but they've got the pieces and it's not put together and they don't know how to put it together. And so they'll send, I've got this report done. And then the school's told me I need this report. So I've got that one done and I've got this other one done. And no, it's just not coherent, there's too many pieces in a sense, that then is overwhelming for A, the parent, because if you've got so many different pieces of a learning puzzle that you're trying to put together for your child, how do all the pieces fit together? And then B, confusing for the school because again, like, whoa, this kid is coming to us and there are all of these different reports. How can we possibly put them together to support them in the classroom? And that, yeah, can just be overwhelming. And I think as well, like some of the people that come in with that many reports, they've been told, my child has this, and now my child has this as well, and my child has that too, and this one over here. And there's that lack of coherence between all of the pieces, and I guess lack of understanding that a lot of, if you came to me with five different diagnoses, for example, a lot of those, especially through, neurodivergence, they're all going to interlink and cross over. And, it might cancel out some of the things that you've then come to me with because it's actually sitting under this completely different banner. And I think that's where parents get confused and overwhelmed. And that's what we see, parents coming in with us into the tutoring center. For like me as the director of a tutoring center, it has meant a lot of re-education for myself because I came out of a classroom as a classroom high school teacher. We were aware of some of the issues that our students were presenting in the classroom, but not, being able to read through reports and provide that sustained assistance for students. And so it's a whole different ball game at the end of the day when they're coming in for tutoring with all of these attached diagnosis or non-diagnosed or just ideas, snippets of information about what could possibly be going on for their child as well.
I think I see that a lot as well. And I think it's really hard for parents when they've seen a range of professionals who maybe look at their child through one lens only, whether it be the psychology lens about the learning or the language lens from speeches or the motor lens from OTs. And then, that part that's missing is understanding how they all link together. And that's really hard for parents to be able to do, I think. You mentioned something earlier about like that they also maybe don't understand the role of a tutor. How would you describe the role of a tutor in the life of a child who has learning challenges?
I think it's a good question because it could be anything.
Yeah,
It
okay.
could be anything, and I think that's what parents need to be thinking about is a lot of the time when we're thinking that our child needs a tutor, it's normally because either, well, some schools will actually target it and say, you know, your child is actually behind in these areas and perhaps you should find a tutor or the additional assistance would be helpful. Sometimes the schools won't target it, they won't tell you. Sometimes we find a lot of schools, I guess, trying to, I don't know if cover up's the right word, but you know, they're trying to hide away from where a child is actually sitting within the classroom. So they're not forthcoming with information. You know, when you're reading a child's report, sometimes just the use of terminology within the reports, you know, there's hidden difficulties in there, but you need to know how to read them well to pick up on those. And yeah, so I mean, the role of a tutor is very rare, very, very varied. So we have, obviously, we work through skills gaps is like our main focus, finding the skills gaps for students and then building up from where that gap is so that they can access their more complex skills that are related to that. And that is kind of what we're targeting with primary school in particular. You know, it's easier for us to do an assessment that finds where the skills gap is for something like primary school. Whereas in high school, they move through the content really, really quickly. So, a lot of the time with our high school students, we're trying to find the skills where there's gaps so that we can build them, but we also don't have a huge amount of time to work on building those gaps. So it's a lot of the time is trying to keep the student up to date with what they're doing in the classroom and then, you know, giving them the support so that they can continue to move forward because the pace of what they are doing in the classroom is so quick. Like you could start, you know, one week doing one topic of mathematics and end the week on a completely different topic. So that, you know, they're moving them so quickly throughout the curriculum and the content that if they are struggling to get the hold of the content there and they're struggling to understand exactly how to put the pieces together for themselves, then they're just going to just snowballs. You know, we find that a lot more in high school, the snowball, than anything else. So that's kind of the skills compartment. But then we have, you know, structure. So essay specific structure, for example, and, you know, where students have been taught, you know, there's a thousand different acronyms for how to put a paragraph together well, for example. But it's so technical that it comes out like dot points instead of a conversation, or instead of an argument in the paragraphing. So sometimes it's then doing those types of structural things. Sometimes it's assessment based. So students needing help understanding how to pull assessments apart and then help organizing themselves and getting tasks done. Sometimes it's homework as well. So, students struggling with homework, a lot of the time we find the struggles with homework are though due to the fact the child is struggling with that skill that they're given in their homework. So, yeah, but as many and varied, like there's so many different things in that. And then on top of that, there is, you know, I guess the looking out for our students and their mental health and mental well-being and those types of things as well that often I guess are overlooked. You know, if I was just to sit with a child and only be focusing on the work but not looking at the barriers that are sort of stopping them from, in some regards, admitting that they need help with schoolwork, then it's just like pushing against a brick wall. So There's all of that incorporated in that for us anyway, for us at Breakaway Education. So
Yeah, that's been really helpful and eye-opening for me, even as well, to understand what the role of a tutor might be. And I think that is going to help parents a lot because you mentioned that it's really varied. So it's sometimes it's difficult to explain it as a simple thing, but I think maybe that simple idea is one thing parents have in their mind about what a tutor is and what they do, but the reality is it could be that or many other things.
yeah, that's right. And I think, I mean, a lot of the time we're seeing things like, like Cluey Learning, for example, on the TV, and they're very like academic. We're helping with the academics, academic, academic. And yeah, we definitely help, with the academic side, but there is also a lot more that occurs behind the scenes so that our students who are coming to us are feeling confident and safe and happy. And I guess, like I said, like they are feeling that they can actually admit that, yes, I am struggling and I need some help. And so a lot of the time it's that switch between, teaching concepts, but then mentoring our students at the same time. Even up in your HSC grades, like a lot of that, although it's very heavy content focused, is also mentoring and conversations about, well, how are you actually going with your workload and how can I help you so that that's not so overwhelming for you? And, it takes on a whole other level, basically, than just the academics.
I think that's, so important. And studies show that too, that, and you've already said it, the mental health and well-being is such an important part of the learning. It's not about focusing on one versus the other, which sometimes schools have the view of, but in increasing that mental health and well-being increases the academic learning and capacity. But I think what you mentioned too about having kids feel like they've got a place where they can trust the person they're talking to and open up about what the challenge is really how you dig down to find out that, that core, like I think you mentioned it, a skills gap, and to work on that, whether it be in primary school, academic skill gaps or older with planning out assignments and preparing, essays and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and there seems to be a lot, like especially with our, probably year 9 to 12 students, that there is just this expectation that the students know how to study, or they know how to organize their time, and they know how to complete 6 assignments in 1 week. And there's just this, oh, they should already know this, rather than, perhaps we need to revisit it even every 6 months and remind, or go over things that are going to be helpful, or even, I guess, like the one size fits all. Like if you have a look at things like the best way to study, for example, you'll see a lot of the same material coming up time and time again, but that doesn't work for every kid. And so like those types of things as well. So
I think what you've how you've talked about it really sits nicely as, alongside how I think about it from a psychologist's point of view too, that when kids are little, it's often about finding out the skill gap and teaching them some things. But then as kids get more into high school, I do see what you see about the curriculum moving so quickly. So you can still work on those skill gaps a bit, but it's often about then trying to get through the work. But for me, what I see the learning being it for high school kids is more about, okay, what strategies work for me and what can I do to take charge of that? So for example, if it's, that reading is hard, they might listen in class more or things like that and really like taking ownership of it themselves.
Yeah, massively. And I think as well with that, for high school kids, it's Once they recognize what works for them and what works best for them, it's then also trying to open up the dialogue with their school and their school teachers as well. And I guess schools being more accepting of students saying, well, this doesn't work for me the best. I really need it in this particular way. And being open to that rather than, I guess, seeing it as, oh, like, no, this child can't tell me how they learn best, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a fine line. It's been interesting, though, I guess, having operated in a school as a teacher and seeing how schools operate. And although I've been out of the classroom now for going on 8 years, which is crazy, but being on the outside has then allowed me to see how it's operating on the outside more so, and see then from the parents' perspective as well. And so when you're teaching in a school, you're in very insular, you only see what your school is doing and how your school is working with parents and students, and you only see it on your individual school level. But being on the outside, I'm very fortunate that I can see it across the whole, across all of our schools in the area, and I can, see what's working and what doesn't work, but then what ways are working best for our students. And because it's always, and it is another interesting thing, that there are, I guess, trends that come through from the same school. So we might see a group of students come through from one school with the same challenges. And so, like, those types of things, you're like, oh, okay, so that's a gap there that that needs to be addressed or looked at. And
That would be so interesting to see. And I think you're right about it being, because I think, guess in private practice too, I see quite a range of responses from schools, and they differ so much. And every school is trying to just fit into the, standards of education. I can't remember what it's called, curriculum, that's the word. And trying to do things in the right way, and in an equitable way. But you're right that if you, without seeing how other people do it, it limits your kind of awareness of what's possible, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that then draws into things like there is a curriculum change at the moment in New South Wales, for example. And so there has been a big change in what's being taught to start with, and then what the expectations are of students. And there's been a huge, like, the education department has now put out a whole stack within their curriculum about the science of learning and, things like the science of reading, our evidence-based approaches that had not been outlined or put into the curriculum previously in such a direct manner. And all of a sudden, we've got everyone scrambling because they're like, oh, I've got to be doing these things. But, it's similar when you're doing your professional development as a teacher. Like, you only know what you only know what you've been sent to do for the school, and then how you're implementing that as a school is totally dependent on if it's being implemented or if it's just being ticked off a list as well. So yeah, lots of different
So it is tricky, and I wonder, because you were mentioning before that you've moved into the space of supporting teachers, with the things they might not be learning through their teaching degree and being able to implement. Is this the kind of thing that's led you there, that awareness of the teacher experience?
Massively so. I think the knowledge that I have been able to search and find for myself in the last year, or 8 years, not last year, it feels like a year, in the last 8 years, the amount of knowledge that I have been able to find that is really important and would have been very important when I was in the classroom is massive. And we've got these huge gaps between what is being taught in teacher education and what the reality of the classroom is.
Right.
And it they've tried to reform what the teaching degrees are looking like at a range of different universities, but there are still gaps everywhere in that. But again, it comes back to also that insular environment, if you are only shown what your school is doing and what they want you to learn as a teacher, then you're stopping or you're being stopped from your growth in that sense as well.
Yeah, less aware of what you don't know if you
Yeah,
don't
that's right.
see it. Yeah.
And I think perhaps then that's an opportunity for more schools to be working in partnership with each other, to kind of open up the way that different schools are operating within the area. And even just, honestly, like, is this working for our school? Is this working for our staff? Is there another way, opening those discussions there? But there is a huge gap between what students are being taught in the university classroom, what their expectations are on their pracs differ widely as well, depending on where you've been placed and what school you've been placed at and what mentoring teacher you've been placed with. So all of that combination, and then what you're expected to know the first day that you step into that classroom and how you're supposed to just switch on all of this stuff that a lot of the time you haven't even been taught.
And I think, like, from a psych point of view too, if when we're stressed, we don't learn well or problem solve or be creative either. So I think if teachers can often find themselves in a stressful situation where they're kind of the demands kind of outweigh how much experience or knowledge they have, and then it just makes it so much harder to be creative and seek answers. I know that our kids are probably like that too, right? Once they get stressed about their learning, it makes it harder.
Yeah, I think as well, like when kids get stressed about their learning, they turn off, they block out the things that they find stressful, and the way that they're doing that are in the behaviors that we often would see that's presented within a classroom environment. The kid who is yelling out or who's throwing pens at the ceiling or something is the kid that probably needs some assistance, but that's their distraction. That's the way that they can distract from the fact that they're struggling. And so, being aware of those types of things. Yeah, I think I get sidetracked a lot in
Oh, no, I don't think so. It's all part of this big conversation, but I was thinking too, like the kids who get sidetracked, that there's also those kids who just look out the window, and when the teacher says, "Do you need help?" they go, "No, I'm good." Those quiet little ones who bluff their way through a lot of stuff as well.
It's
But
interesting because you still find a lot of the report comments coming back, and it's like the student needs to ask for help, or the student needs to contribute to class discussions, the student needs to raise their hand if they need help. And when you see, and I see it in reports all the time, and it's like this child is not asking for help because they need help. Like that should be an indicator. But like you said, like you've got the kid that is looking out the window, or the quiet kids that might be looking at the person next to them with the side eyes and trying to figure it out that way. And I think as well that comes back to though that perhaps in education there is still very much a this is the right way and that is the wrong way type thing. Like obviously in a subject like maths, yes, there is a right and a wrong answer, but the way that I get to that answer can be many and varied. And I feel that kids are told that they're wrong or their way is wrong all the time. So that is then stopping them asking for help because they don't want to be told that they're wrong again.
It is. It's just if we take a minute and think about it from the kids' point of view, it's hard being in the classroom when learning's a challenge, and it's hard to ask for help. And I often think that, as adults, we're the ones who've got way more skills than kids do. So if we can kind of take the initiative to be asking them and checking in with them, that's going to be a lot better. And yeah, so I hear what you're saying about each time asking and being told that they're wrong, that kind of knocks their self-esteem a lot. And the more that gets knocked, the harder everything becomes.
Yeah, that's right. And I, as well, like I think personality, and if you have a child that has, say, a louder personality, it comes back to that as well. Like if they're always told to be quiet and stop being so loud, and they will then turn into that child who is really quiet in the corner and will go underneath the radar then, because A, because the extroverted behaviors that students exhibit are often overpowering within that classroom to start with. But if they're being told that they're too much personality wise, and then they can't access that help either. So
And I'm just thinking now about what parents should do if they're having concerns about their child's learning. You mentioned at the beginning that some of what you do is assessment or screeners for, you mentioned dyslexia. So tutors can do some assessment about this stuff, but if parents are worried about their kids' learning, what do you think, what process would be a good one for them to follow?
I think if you're worried about your child's learning in the very first place, always have the chat with your child's teacher to start with. So even if all it's come out of the blue, if all of a sudden you've been told that your child is struggling, having that conversation with the teacher will at least give you some more of an indication of what's going on as your first port of call. Then, finding the right additional people to chat to. So it depends on different tutoring centers that might be near you, and the way that they go through processes with their parents. But I always have a chat with mine, either like face to face or on the phone, about what they're finding that they're struggling, or what they're finding their child is struggling with. And to get a bit more of an idea. And it's always more than just academics. And I think that's the thing, that the academics is kind of that top of the iceberg type thing, but there is so much more that's going on underneath, and the academic part is kind of the last thing, or sometimes the only thing we see on the surface. So it's identifying, yeah, the right people to chat to about that. Sometimes the assessment is the way to go. Like our tutoring assessments, for example, will give you a good indication of academic wise where your child is struggling. But with my tutors, we always have the conversations about where to direct parents to and who to direct them to if there are things beyond what we can do. So I have clearance through Psychology Australia to do a dyslexia screening. So that, though, I had to get clearance to be able to do, and I could do that because I have an English teaching background, but I can't do dyscalculia because I don't have a maths teaching background. So you have to apply to be able to do those screenings. But then with that, I would always then be going educational psychologist. That's the thing that I always go back to. And if you can find one that is holistic and is looking at everything rather than just one thing that's targeted, you're going to get a really clear picture, not just academic wise. You want to find, the people that are going to then say, oh, well, we've noticed these characteristics, and so we'd like to run this, assessment now to see if that, to collate all, pull everything together. But the absolute best that you can do, if there are severe learning difficulties, if you're thinking that there are severe learning difficulties, always go educational psychologist to actually pull out and get those, proper diagnosis rather than just an I think it could be.
And for parents to know, then as an educational psychologist, what we would do is, it feels weird. I've finished my master's in educational psychology last year, but I'm not done the training yet to be able to call myself one. So you would know from Psychology Australia and the dyslexia screening, there's a lot of hoops and stuff. But yeah, so that's where we would look at a child's kind of problem solving and learning capacity, and then look at the difference between that capacity and how what they're learning educationally, and trying to find those, I think you mentioned, like those underlying skills that might be getting in the way of learning. So for example, how they're processing different types of information and that kind of thing. And then, yeah, like you said, there's more than that too. It's about your child's individual qualities, whether they ask for help, whether they like trying new things. So many kids just really don't like making mistakes, I find. So they'll hold themselves back because they don't want to make a mistake and that kind of thing. And so then after that, they can kind of maybe is that when a tutor would step in to help develop those skills?
And so, I mean, we would always step in the first place to help develop whatever the skill is that's come through that your child is struggling. But when there are, I guess in-depth concerns, we would always be sending you out to that educational psychologist just so that you have that full set of idea as to what's going on. I guess the skills are never going to be like left behind in a sense, but getting that additional information does and can change drastically the way that you're interacting with a child in a session, how you're presenting information to them, what I guess the expectations are in terms of, memory recall and, processing of information and those types of things as well, which then obviously the more information that you have, you can filter out to your child's school to then help them in that regard as well. So, yeah.
So seeking help from the teacher first, or understanding of what the challenges are, and then connecting with a tutor who can start working on some of the skills already, start doing some assessment, but also link families with other assessments that might be needed. And that kind of informs then the tutoring that can evolve and get more targeted over time.
Yeah, that's right. And I think as well, like I think keeping in mind that tutoring is a very, I guess, a fluid process. So where we start might or not might most of the time evolves into other things as well. And so even though we might say start targeting writing, for example, we might then find that it's not just, say, the handwriting aspect, it's the sentence construction, and that flows into your spelling, and then that could also flow into your reading. And so it's understanding that even if you come in with a specific skill that you're wanting a tutor to focus on, a good tutor will then be able to pick up all of the other things that are going into that skill and going on for that child as well within that. So it can change quite drastically. The original tutoring I guess guidelines or tutoring process that we start with can change very, very quickly as we uncover more, as your child gets more comfortable as well, as children get more comfortable in the environment, then they'll give more information. They'll show more of the things that they're struggling with because they're feeling more comfortable. And that's also why the tutoring process then changes as well. So,
Sounds great because the last, I mean, the changing is, I agree with you, the hallmark of a good tutor or even as a psychologist, the good psychologist, because it's not a standard cookie cutter, everyone does everything approach, because that's what's not working in the school to start with.
That's right. That's a whole other conversation.
Yes, maybe one for another day.
That's it.
But I'm wondering now, because parents listening, I'm assuming, are thinking that sounds great. Where can they find you, Breakaway Education, and if they want to follow you and know more?
Yeah, so you can find us on Instagram and Facebook by just looking up Breakaway Education. Our website is www.breakawayeducation.com.au. And yeah, we do face-to-face tutoring, but also online tutoring as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned online is not suitable for every child, and I think I agree, but it's probably a matter of just having a chat on the phone first, maybe to see if it's going to be something that suits a child.
Yeah, massively. So, again, like not one approach fits every child. There's obviously multiple ways that you can do tutoring online, but there are some children that it just absolutely does not work for. But yeah, best way to do it is to ring, have a chat, so that we can see what your child is struggling with in the first place and what other things might be challenging for them. So then we can figure out whether, something like online is the best option for them moving forward.
That sounds great. Thanks so much for this conversation today. It's opened my eyes up about the tutoring role and how much you can support. And I think it will have for a lot of families as well.
Yeah, thank you. It's been such a good discussion to have.
Yeah, we'll have that one about schools later on at some point.
Okay, definitely.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Parent Like a Psychologist. If you found it helpful, please share on Instagram so other parents can benefit too, and tag me at Leanne Tran Psychology so that I can say a big thank you. Head over to leannetran.com.au to join the village for bite-sized psychology tips straight to your inbox. I really hope this podcast has brought a new perspective and you a step closer towards a calm parent and a thriving child. Have a delightful day.